down, I'm an addict. You know, breathe, Darren, breathe. You know, it's, did anyone else think that the traditions were read in slow motion? You know, that's what, like, come on, speed it up a bit. You know, it's, I'm sitting up here now, and I remember coming to this meeting sort of early doors and sitting. I used to sit over there, you know, especially when I come in first of all. It was bad enough just walking down the stairs and getting to the first lot of chairs. I thought, just walk down the stairs, get to the chairs, sit down, and be all right, you know. Try not to engage in too many people, you know. And it took me 2 years, this is my truth, to actually get up and get a key ring. I used to suggest to other people, go on, get up, get a key ring, go on, get it, you know. It took me all that time, you know. And I didn't really know what was sort of, I didn't know why. But sort of, I've kept coming back and I sort of understand why. You know, and I sort of understand now, sitting up here, why, you know, sort of being consumed. You know, when I got asked to do this share, sort of I was in it, I'd been asked to do, you know, sort of that God's will, you know, that God connection. I believe in that stuff, you know. I'd been asked to do a talk in a homeless hostel, you know, and I sort of thought I'd do the homeless hostel, and my phone went off while I'm in the middle of this talk, and I had a look, and it, could you speak to the speakers? So I put it back in my pocket quick, got on with that, I thought, oh, wow, that's good. Pulled it out of my pocket, and it said, can you do the 40 minutes? From that point, it was horrendous, you know. It weren't good, you know, it was horrendous. You know, it's like you lot probably decided that you got here this morning. I knew you was coming 2 months ago, and I started doing your thinking for you 2 months ago. You know, and that's what I've sort of, you know, that's what I suffer with. You know, there's part of my illness telling me that I've got to say this, got to say that, they've got to hear this, and don't say that because you've said it before, and, you know, they've heard this, and da da da, all of that stuff, you know. And you know, I've talked to a few people wound me up today, you know, as it is, in a loving and caring way. I've talked to a few people, and, you know, they said about, you know, don't just talk about all you're using for 40 minutes. So that's on my mind. Don't talk about using 40 minutes. And now I'm thinking, if I talk about using at all, you know, talk about using. Don't swear and don't run, you know. So I've sort of got that loop going through, you know. And I listened to the first share, you know, it's like America and it sounded all good. I used in Ilford, you know. I'm less than straight away, you know. You know, it's like... You know, and yeah, so, you know, everyone said to me, you know, said, it'll be all right. And you know, when you're in a few feelings, you've got a bit of gear going on, and you sort of speak to someone in recovery, it's a recovery answer, you'll be all right, because it's the truth, you'll be all right, you know, don't pick up, do the right thing, you'll be all right. But you know, when you're sort of in it and you think, I know, I don't want you to say that, don't tell me it'll be all right, I know it'll be all right, you know. But that, what I understand, you know, that's the sort of love that I've got given in here, because I never thought it was going to be all right. You know, I never. You know, I can't think. I remember my sponsor saying to me early doors, you know, it'll be all right. I just look at him confused. You know, what is that? Will it? You know, I don't know that. You know, so I sort of start trying to sort of like get in the room a little bit, you know, sort of the anxiety to drop down and sort of connect with something, you know, and so that it, sort of. Where I really come from, you know, and I sort of identified with the illness, you know. We talk about the disease of addiction in here, you know, and for me, how I got the identification is I went to a meeting, I ended up, I sort of go all over, I ended up in a treatment centre, which I may talk about in a little while, and I weren't in there long, you know, I left, you know, I'll tell you a bit about that, but this fella shared about all these drug stories. You know, and I was sitting up the back, switched off. I just don't want to hear it. I just do not want to hear those. Because I'd had years and years of this, you know, telling these stories and, you know, listening to other people's nonsense and all that sort of stuff, and I didn't want to hear it. And then he said something that, he talks about winning a competition when he was really young. And everyone went, oh, it's really good. And he said, it weren't enough. And I identified with that. You know, I identified with that, being that child. And everyone else out there seemed to have it all going on. You know, it seemed like, well, you look like you're enjoying that. You know, you look like that's enough for you. And that, you know, it's like, whereas me, it never was. It was never enough, you know. I'd like, when I got here and I heard loads of stories all through my life, I sort of thought, it'd be really handy if my mum and dad were alcoholics and addicts, because then I could just really pin it on them, you know. I pinned it on them anyway, and they're not alcoholics or addicts, you know. So it's like that sort of, you know, that blame game is what I always did. And that's, you know, got a bit lost then. Yeah, so I come in here sort of like, you know, wanting to blame, you know, that it was about them, but it wasn't about them. You know, for me it was, nothing was enough. That's where I was going. You know, my mum gave me all the love she could, you know. I hesitate and question with my dad, but he did the best he could with what he had, you know. And it weren't enough. You know, it weren't enough. I used to look at them, you know, look at other people, you know. Sort of that thing, you know, and I've heard it shared a lot, you know. I always wanted someone else's mum and dad because it looked like they give more, you know. Looked at mine and they didn't, you know. It was always, I sort of stay at what time I liked, but my mate could always stay out half hour later, you know what I mean? It was always, there was more over there, you know, and... So nothing was ever enough, you know, and that's the thing that really got me, you know, because that was about, you know, my thinking, you know. I'd sort of done things as a child that changed the way I feel, you know. I suffer with that fear-based illness, you know. The anxiety goes through the roof and I want to run away, you know. And that was present long before I picked up, you know. We talk about sort of like the school holidays, great, beginning of school holidays, right? I know now, as it started to get towards the end of the 6 weeks holiday, and I know I got back to school, it's coming on top. You know, and I'm starting to pull moves not to go to school. And I'm not talking about being 12, I'm talking about 8 years old, you know, sort of trying to pull moves. I remember Sunday nights going to school, drinking Coke before so I wouldn't sleep, you know, because then, you know, the morning won't come round if I sort of don't sleep, you know. That was the sort of thing. So what I'm sort of saying is that I had major issues, you know, as a child, you know. And what I understand now, you know, it weren't produced, or maybe it was part of, you know, of my upbringing and, you know, my mum, dad's dysfunction, you know, it might have been, you know, but that weren't the cause of it, you know, it was the way I thought and the way I processed stuff, you know, and it's this whole thing about nothing was ever enough, you know, and I knew that, you know. I remember my old man, he used to, at Christmas time, open the presents, they do the best they could, didn't have loads of dough, but they did the best they could. And I knew it as a kid. I was the most ungrateful kid in the world. And my old man, you ungrateful, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he'd, you know, get a bit heavy and all that. And I couldn't work it out. I didn't work it out for another 30 years till I ended up in NA, you know, because I knew about the illness and I knew about the thinking and I knew that I was never content. I was never content. You know, so I had all that gear going on, you know, way before, you know, I weren't thinking about using. You know, I wasn't thinking about drinking or drugging. I wasn't thinking, you know, that's what I think I'll do, you know. I'll probably live a life of trying to change the way I feel by taking drugs. It weren't the plan, you know. But, of course, for me, it's a no-brainer. When I did, you know, when I picked up that first drink, and I, you know, and my experience with that is, you know, it was a few times I sort of drunk. I don't, you know, sort of about 12 years old, had a little dabble and that, but it was a school disco. And it was three of us. My mate nicked a bottle of scotch out of the shop, and we decided to drink it, you know. And my mate, one of them, didn't like it. He just didn't like it. He had a few, so don't like that, and he stopped. Right. My other mate drank it, you know. The school had to phone an ambulance. He had to have his stomach pumped. Right. I drank it, right, and I come to life. All that insecurity, all that less than, all that negative, everything, all of a sudden, everything was enough, you know. And the teachers, you know, they were looking at me going, well, you know, and I drank more than anyone else there, you know. And they went, well, we don't think you've drunk as much as the other two, you know. And I'm thinking, what? You know, so roll the tape on when I come in and I hear about this disease and about the reaction that we have, you know, and all that sort of stuff. I think, blimey, there it was. There it was. I've got three people. One's in hospital, one didn't like it, and one can't stop. And people are saying, you now look like an ordinary young boy. You know, you know, it's like the anxiety's going to look like you're fitting in and functioning quite well, you know. So it sort of made sense when I got here and we talked about the reaction, you know. Of course, if you feel like that internally, this is what I know now. I didn't know this. This is all hindsight. This is like keep coming back and doing the work and finding out what I'm about, you know. Why was I going to stop? Never. Never was I going to stop at all, you know, because of what I was going through. You know, I went to senior school the first time, you know, walked in, sat down, had a little look round, got the form class and all that. I went, yeah, okay, actually, it's not for me, and walked out, you know. I remember my mate saying to me, what are you doing? You can't walk out. You know, and I'm going, watch me. You know, and I walked out, you know, and I know now, it took me, like I say, coming in, doing the work. What was that about? You know, it's about that fear-based illness, you know, it's about sort of that anxiety, about not being enough, sort of being found out, being revealed. It's like now I'm in a classroom and I'm compared with other people, you know, and it's going to show, it's going to come on top, I've got to get out of it, you know. And I didn't know that, you know. I've carried that one, you know, I've been a therapist, using my therapist, like the reading says, you know, hypnotherapist, trying to come to the solution. No one told me that that was a fear-based way of thinking. That's why you did it for fear. So when I started working the steps, it went bang, bang, bang. All these professionals that I see over the years, or well, admittedly, I was using and lying, but they should have known, you know. Yeah, and so I've carried that a long time, you know, right, sort of through my life, and that was it, you know, that was sort of like I say, why would I stop? Of course I'm not going to stop, you know, and I'm sort of like looking at, you know, it says in the book about misinformed people, it's like I must have gone through my whole life talking to the misinformed people, you know, it took me a long time to find you lot, you know, that weren't misinformed, because I was at, you know, these theories and these, I try this and try that, and, you know, I had my own sort of theories, you know, about sort of like getting clean and, you know, because alcohol was a real big one for me, right the way through, you know. I actually tried to stop drinking at the age of 17, you know. How I sort of did it was I picked up drugs. It weren't the best move in the world, you know, but that was my best plan, you know. And I went to the doctors. I went to the doctors at 17, I was an head doctor. I said, I keep drinking and not remembering anything. He went, you're a blackout drunk. I went, oh, thanks, Doc. I went to lads, I went, hey, lads, I'm a blackout drunk. And just continue to do it, you know, right the way through, you know. Which is, it's really sad, you know, it's really sad because, you know, the experiences I've had with that, you know, it's like I've been in the dock and when they say to you, this is what you've done, what have you got to say? I said, well, if that's what you say I've done, that's what I've done, you know. I've been in cells where, you know, it's like I've come to and I'm not in the best for wear, you know. It's like, oh God, that hurts. Oh God, quickly go, you had an hiding last night. You know, quick look at the ceiling, crime stop goes, oh no, you know. Quick look round to think, I don't recognise this. This is, I've not been here before, wonder where I am, you know. So all that, and I don't even know where I am, what nick, you know. You know, and I remember this one instance, you know, and I pressed the buzzer and this cop, he was, yeah, I said, I remember looking through the little window and there's a geezer opposite, you know. And you know sort of one of us, we're on a bit of a level, you know, we've all seen an hiding and all that sort of thing, so you're not really shocked. And I looked through this little window and the geezer looked back and he went, like that. I thought, well, if he's shocked and he's looked in another cell, it's got to be pretty bad. So I pressed the buzzer to see what had happened and cop had come up. He just went to me, you're in here for attempted murder. He said, someone will be with you in a little while. I sat down and I thought, what the... You know, what, you know, that was a bit of a shocker, as you can well imagine, you know. And I had no idea, no idea. You know, it was like, as it turned out, you know, it sort of got dropped. He was pulling a bit of a fast one. I did, you know, am I going to get into that story? I don't know where I'm going here. Yeah, there was a bit of a story where in blackout, I got involved in a bit of a fight, you know, and I go insane. I'm insane. I'm insane without drink. And you put it inside me and I go insane, you know, and I've come up with this really good plan of running them all over, you know, absolutely in blackout. You know, it's you know, got my missus in the car next to me, you know, and I'm flat out for a hotel car park. Me, 8 geezers give me an hiding. Totally missed them all. Drove into the foyer of the hotel and run the DJ over who was loading his van. You know, luckily he wasn't badly hurt, but yeah, and he didn't press charges. You know, there's a sort of, like, this is my sort of using. You know, but getting back to, you know, being in that cell when that copper says that, you know, I didn't know, I didn't know. You know, and I remember doing my step work. I remember reading out some of my step 4 and my step 5, reading it out, and my sponsor, he turned around. You know, he shared a bit of his experience, and I thought, blimey, I ain't that bad. He was horrendous. You know, and. And he called me, I'm still not over this, it was a few years ago, I'm still not, he went, you're murderous. I thought, murderous is a bit strong, isn't it? And he said, some of the things you've done here, people have been lifed off for, you know, it's like, if it just went a slightly little bit that way, or a slightly little bit that way, and, you know, and he said to me, you know, many, many addicts I banged up because of that one decision, that one thing, that one blackout and all that, you know. And what I realised at that point is how lucky I am, you know, how lucky. So, like, the, you know, it's just sort of one story. I could sit here for the rest of the night and go on about those stories, as we all could, you know. And I tried to control all my using. You know, I knew drink was a demon. Didn't make a lot of difference, you know, because I thought, right, I put sort of drugs with drink and we'd be all right, you know. Could not put it down. First one ever picked up, last one. Last drink I had, smuggled it in. I was under section in a mental health hospital and we got some drink in there and I went into blackout. You know, that's the last alcoholic drink I ever had. And that's sad. I remember I was with a few lads and they said that they carried me back to the room. The staff got out of the way, you know, because I'm a bit of a big lump and, you know, I'm a bit messy when I'm drunk, you know what I mean? And the lads put me in the room and they left me there. And I remember, you know, you talk about bottoms, and I think I'd hit a bottom prior to this. You know, I remember putting my legs, swinging them around. And if you, you know, I'll own this, if you piss the bed, you know, even in a cell or a mental health hospital, don't soak through the mattress because they're plastic, you know. So you wake up, you spun my legs round, and I'm sitting on the side of the bed in a puddle of my own piss, right, looking at the curtains, thinking I might be able to hang myself, and they're on Velcro. You know, the cupboard door that's there is quick release, so you can't do nothing now. And I'm thinking, I'm in a place now, I can't even kill myself. You know, absolutely. You know, and that was it. That, you know, and at this point, right, I'm still sort of using. I didn't know this. I'm still using. I've manipulated. When I went in there, they said, "What do you want, methadone?" I went, "I've rattled that out." They said, "What are you doing drinking? Do you want liver?" No, I'm not that bad. You know, they said, "Well, what do you want?" This is what they said in the mental health, not to me, you know, to one of us. "What do you want?" And I thought, quick on my feet. But a few Valium would be all right. You know, that'd do. So I went, okay, they had to as well to calm me down. You know, so I sort of manipulated that script, you know, and I was on that in there, you know. I sort of got to this bit. Yeah, so that my using, you know, that's where it took me. Like I say, the first one I picked up was out, the last one, and I picked up everything in between. You know, I tried them all. You know, it's like some of the right mental, like right class A top ones, highly addictive. Oh, they were fantastic, you know. Some of the ones that are like, you know, in other places that you might just smoke and that sent me insane. Absolutely. You know, if I went out there now and picked up, I wouldn't pick them up. They scared me that much, you know, because I suffered with like insecurity, paranoia, the whole thing, you know. It was like, you know, acid, wonderful experience. That's a complete and utter lie. It was horrendous, you know. Take a trip for 8 hours, 5 minutes of pleasure, you know, 7 hours and 55 minutes of hanging on for dear life, wanting to kill your mate. You know, you say one word and I'm going to kill you, you know, like that sort of stuff. So you would think, probably only done it once or twice. No, I've done it time and time and time again. Over and over again, you know, same experiences, you know, and someone said, try mushrooms, oh, that'd be wonderful. You know, same thing again, you know. And we wait that time of year, get all excited. I'd get all excited, go, yeah, come on, let's go and do it, you know. Knowing it's going to be horrendous, you know. And it always was. Nothing was any different, you know. So what I'm sort of saying is drugs brought me to my knees in the using, you know. Alcohol consistently, you know, and all different drugs. As I put one down and picked up another one, I thought, oh, this one was all right. You know, this one's all right, this one's all right. Kept picking them up and putting them down and then mixing them together and all, you know, also trying to find the perfect plan, you know. And knowing full well, you know, I knew that I couldn't drink alcohol successfully. You know, it didn't matter. That didn't matter. Continuously, you know, everyone else knew that I couldn't drink alcohol successfully. My missus, right, and I'm still with her now, you know, we got together, you know, we've been together 25 years. She has been through hell. Everything that you can do to a woman, I've probably done. You know, I'm not proud of that. I'm trying to own a bit of that, and I'm trying to put it right. You know, and she's still there. You know, she's still there. And she used to know me with the alcohol. She would come up, she could pick what drink was going to put me in a blackout. So I might have a few, and she'll go, "That one, don't drink that one. Don't drink that one." And I go, "Nah, I'll be all right. Right?" I'll go, and then I'll wake up in a park or house or cell or something, you know. And she knew it, You know, that's how well she knew me, you know. That, so everyone else knew, you know, there weren't no success in my using at all, you know. Not to say that I didn't have some great times, you know, I'm from the rave scene in the late 80s. Mate, I thought I'd had a spiritual awakening then. You know. Oh, yes, that was it. Done deal, you know. All my silly mates, they were stopping on a Sunday afternoon, didn't work that one out. What you got to stop for? Crack on, this is us for the rest of our life. Come on, the rave generation, you know. And that, you know, come unstuck with that and all in the end, you know. And, so, you know, there was some good stuff, but it was never successful. Anyway, I was in the mental institute, you know, in that bad way. I'm drinking in there, you know, I'm pissing the bed, blah, 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 that story. And after a month, I went and see this psychiatrist, went and see the doctor, went and see this, and here it is, the Royal Clincher, and they went, "We're going to have to let you go, there's nothing actually wrong with you." And I was like, what? You know. And that's what they did, you know. One morning, you know, my missus managed to, you know, I was in a bad way, and what happened was, this was on a Friday afternoon, and I knew, I was petrified. I didn't know I was petrified, but I was petrified. I said, "You let out on a Friday afternoon." And I thought, if I get out on a Friday afternoon, it's over. It's a done deal. There's no way on a Friday afternoon, you know. And she actually come up with a book of law, right, up to the mental hospital. And she said that you cannot release them. There was this part of law in this big, thick book she come up with and showed them. And they went, "Okay, we'll give you till Monday morning." You know, and in my head, I thought, that's it, it's done deal, I'll stay here. You know, and Monday morning come, and because I didn't think I was that insane, to be honest. You know, when I think back, you know, I was walking around a pair of shorts and a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses in the nut house, thinking I was it. You know, it's like, you lot are nuts. You know, helping people, helping others, you know, not looking at me and fighting and all sorts. Anyway, they come up to me and said, "Should we call you a cab?" And, you know, all I said was, I went off, well, I'm mad, I'm insane, you know, I'm an addict, you know, I was trying to stop using, I'm insane. They said, "We'll call a cab." I went like a loon. I scared myself, you know, I've really been, you know, I scared myself, I went like a lunatic, you know, and it all come and the buzzers went and all sorts of everything, you know, and I went, no, you know, and I remember coming out, you know, this is like the last chance stuff, coming out of all this stuff, like, I'll kill myself, you know. And this nurse, I remember, when at the time she shot me, she went, "Go on, there's nothing we can do about it." I was like, that's an outrage. It's not your job, you know. And then, I'm clutching at straws, you know. There's no way I'm staying here, I'm leaving, but I'm trying to stay. So I said to, you know, and I said to them, like, "All right then, call the old Bill," you know. And the woman came out really calmly, they were saying, you know, she went, "This is where the police bring you, my dear." And I was like, oh, because I thought prison would be all right. That was my thing, and that's safe. I thought that'd do it. I know that one, you know, and that'd be all right, you know, because I knew if I went out on the street, I was going to use. Anyway, I kicked off, and I had to get off the premises, and they gave me enough medication to do the job, you know. They gave me some tablets, and I sat out there. I remember sitting outside. I had to literally go past the gate, and I had to wait for my missus to come and pick me up. And I remember thinking, you know, it's over. This is it. There's nowhere to go. And I'm looking at these two boxes of tablets, think, I can do the job right here. You know, but something, you know, I call it sort of God instant. Something was there, you know. So I just took enough Valium, you know, just enough to take the edge off, which was okay. And you know, I talk about God because God is continuous through my journey, you know. I got kicked out of there at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, you know, and I didn't have no funding. We didn't have no money at the time, you know. My missus spoke to a treatment centre in Southampton. They done an assessment over the phone, and by 4 o'clock that afternoon, I was in the treatment centre in Southampton, and I was really, really, really angry and didn't know, you know, really angry, and I remember saying to this guy, you know, it's not about that sort of compliance sort of stuff, right? You're in treatment now, you've got to fit in, you know. And I had the attitude of, no, don't smoke there, shut up. You know what I mean? Don't go, you can't do that, you know. Shut. You know, we've got to do the chores. I ain't, you know, all of that stuff. So I was defiant, right? And I'm moaning about it, right? And this geezer come up to me all calm in the treatment. He said, did you get funding for it? I went, no, I think we've got to pay for it private. My missus is talking about getting a loan. He went, oh, all right. He said, you don't really want to be here though, do you? So I went, no, not really. He said, it's strange, isn't it, you're paying for it? And he just walked off. I thought, what's that? And when I thought about that, I thought, how insane am I? You know, I'm paying for this and don't want to be there. I don't have to be there. It's not like I'm on a court order, you know. So other people could see this. Anyway, I was in that treatment centre, you know, and this is my story, you know, and I was not, I weren't going to join him or nothing, you know, nothing at all. You know, I was the, you know, they all smoked outside and I smoked over here. They all went out the back, went out the front, proper isolating. Because I was petrified, I was scared, I didn't know. I didn't know any of this. And, you know, a mate of mine that was using, 10 years previous, had been in a treatment centre and he'd come out. And all he did was used, you know. He's just actually, this was over 10 years ago, and he's just got clean now, you know, and, which is a miracle. But what he did when we was using, he said, yeah, have a look at this book. And we used to sit there looking at this basic text, and it was writing of everyone that was in treatment, and we used to sit there using, and they'd go, she's dead, he's dead, she's dead, he's dead. And we used to sit there sort of reading it. Never actually opened the book any further than that. But he sort of didn't know it, but he 12-stepped me. Because now I knew about the NA basic text. And when I got into treatment, I was really angry, really annoyed, you know. And if you're really angry and really annoyed, right, and you think you've got a bit of a sophisticated drug problem, you know, the hierarchy thing, you know, because I use class A's and I use these ones and da-da-da. Someone gave me a book from the other fellowship, and they sort of said to me that, you're an alcoholic. And every other word was that I thought, how dare you? How dare you give me this book? Look, every other word is alcoholic. So I kindly give it back to him. But I knew about the blue book, you know, and... oh, my God. Well, I knew about their blue book. And what I did is I tried to, I tried to read it myself, you know, and I did, I sat out the front and I read the book, Who is an Addict, sort of got it, you know, I understood what was going on. It was like a revelation for me, because I knew I was an addict, so I knew I couldn't stop using, you know, I knew by the drugs I was using, it was every day, you know, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know about the illness, you know, it talks about higher power in there. I think I read up step three. I read one page 17 times and it was like that, he pushed it away. Because if you've got no knowledge, or no information, and you just try and read that book and do it yourself, you go more insane, you know, because the stuff it says in there is not what I, you know, not where I come from. Anyway, I read that book, and I didn't know this till 2 years. I'd gone to two meetings while I was in there. It took me 2 years to realise that I'd gone to two meetings in the treatment centre. And I remember having this conversation going, I think I know what I need to do now. And everyone in treatment's going, no, no, you've got to stay. I go, no, I think I know what I've got to do. I think I've got to go to these meetings. They go, no, you've got to stay, you know. And another high power moment, because they wouldn't let me use the phone. And all of a sudden, my missus phoned up to see how it was. And I had a mad conversation with my missus. I said, here, look. I said, I'm a liar, a cheat, and a manipulator, all right? She went, well, I know that. I said, but you've got to come and get me, because I don't need a beer anymore, yeah. And you know, she's been me a little, and I am a liar, cheat, and a manipulator, so I manipulated her to come and get me, and she did, you know, and she came and got me from Southampton. But prior, before I sort of left there, right, the manager pulled me aside because everyone's worried. And I'll tell you this story, how I got the bed in that treatment centre is because the fella before me left treatment, picked up and died. That's, you know, that was it. That's why I've got this bed, you know. And I was going to do exactly what he'd done. So everyone there is going to be, don't. Saying me, you know, I did it. And the manager pulled me aside and he said, when you come in here, you know, 5 days ago, he said, you was broken. He said, you couldn't see a way out. He said, and you've picked up this book. He said, you've been to these meetings. He said, you can see a way out. And I sort of looked at him. Didn't know really what he was talking about. I sort of went, yeah. And he went, you found hope. And I looked back at him and thought, I went, do I need that? That's what I said. That's how smashed I was and broken. You know, and he went, yeah. And he said, you now know, see, where you've been to these meetings. He said, people are getting clean. They've been where you are, all right? And he said, they're staying clean and all that. And he said, you know what you've got to do because we've got to go to meetings. And I went, yeah. He said, well, there's a bit of faith. And again, I said, do I need that? When I think back, it's so sad how shut down I was. You know, just being shut down as that little boy and then putting drugs on top just took me away from society. you know, and that stood me in good stead, you know. I had a bit of hope and a bit of faith, and I, you know, and that's what I know now that I needed. And he said something to me, right, that probably changed my life, you know. Something really simple, and he probably don't even know he said it, I don't know, you know. He said to me, whatever you do when you leave here, you must go to meetings. And I went, like we do. Yeah, of course I am, of course I'm going to go. Cool. I didn't even know. I thought I might, I don't know. Right. And then he said to me, he said, but you're not going to go. And I remember thinking, all confused, like, what? You just told me to go to meetings. I just told you that I'm going to go. But now you're telling me that I'm not going to go to meetings. Like, it's a little bit, he's nuts, this geezer, isn't he? You know? And that was it. My missus came and picked me up. You know, 2-hour drive back from Southampton. When I think of some of the things that I said to her in that journey, I mean, she knew I was nuts anyway, but now I've got this sort of like a bit of the basic tech knowledge with no other information. You know, I've got an illness, I've got a disease, you know, like she's looking, oh, what is he coming up with now? You know, I've heard some plans and some scams. Anyway, we come back, 2-hour drive, and we got back she had to go and pick my daughter up, so she'd done a bit of driving. I'd lost my driving licence 10 years previous. I never had a driving licence, so I was trying to do it the right way now and not drive, because I'd always driven with no licence and stuff, so I couldn't drive. So she said to me, I'll take you to the meeting. So I got online, it was a Saturday, we're looking for the meeting, and there was a meeting just up the road, and I said, right, I'll go to that later on. She went and picked up my little girl, she'd come back, and she went, right, you ready to the meeting? I went, well, I'll tell you what, you've driven quite a long way, you know. Let's just sort of take it easy, right? And I'll go to a meeting tomorrow, right? Just said that. So that was it. Stayed in, didn't go to the meeting. I woke up the next morning, right? And I literally sat bolt upright in my bed, right? I remember it, bolt upright. And all I could remember was this manager telling me that I wasn't going to go to the meeting. And I thought, how did he know what I wasn't going to do a day before I didn't do it? You know, and it scared me, you know. I guess it's that real sort of like, he knew my illness, he knew about addiction, he knew about, you know, the resistance against it, and I had no idea, and that scared me, because I think that was the first time someone told me about my thinking before I'd even thought it, you know, and it absolutely scared me. I went into I went to a meeting the very next day. I went into a meeting, Sunday night, Chelmsford, you know, and I sat down, the fella did a share, and he said, I'm 18 months clean, off of street drugs, of prescribed drugs. And I was like, I picked up a 30-day Kiwi, you know, through the night out, and blah, 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 and I didn't think alcohol was a drug, and da-da-da, so I thought, so I've got these sort of 30 days, and then I realised that I've manipulated this, you know, Valium script. I was sitting in there in a state of trauma, right, absolutely messed up, medicated, right? I didn't know what was about to come when I decided to get clean. Anyway, when I heard that message, you know, about abstinence. Two things I heard in that meeting. They said, keep coming back, and they said it's abstinence based. And I knew I'd manipulated the script. I went to my doctors. They give you 5 minutes in the doctors. I went to someone else and said, how'd you speak to a doctor? They went, this is revolutionary. They went, tell him the truth. I was like, leave off. How do you do that? You know, I was in the doctors for an hour, told him the whole truth. And he just knowingly sitting there nodding, going, I've known this for years. Look at your record, you know. He put me I went on a rapid detox off the Valium. And I went in that meeting the following Sunday and I picked up white kiwi. And that was my first day clean in recovery. And since that point, you know, I haven't had to pick up another white key ring just for a day, you know, and I got the sponsor, you know, and I was very lucky with a sponsor that I picked, you know, and the man gave me everything. The man's now passed away and he's still helping me, he's still giving me everything, you know. He went beyond any other human being that I've ever met in my entire life, you know, of what he gave me, you know. He knew me inside out. He knew everything about me. He knew about this illness, and he did not ever stop giving, you know, ever, you know. And for that, you know, he taught me how to deal with his own death. And that's a powerful, powerful situation. You know, I've just been out of South Africa and I took his ashes out of there. You know, and I never thought I'd be digging a hole and burying a tree with a medallion and my sponsor's ashes. And then, although it was like a powerful moment, you know, it was like one of them moments that he prepared me for, you know. He prepared me for that, you know, and and that's why, you know, I come to NA now, you know, and I do what I do, you know, because I was given love like I've never been given before, you know. I couldn't receive it. And even when I couldn't receive it in here, it was still kept being given to me, you know. And I've never experienced anything, you know, like what I've experienced in here. And people talk about, you know, don't leave until the miracle happens. Didn't get that one for a little while, you know, and that's, you know, that's what I'd say, you know, don't leave until the miracle happens. And if you've got a bad experience in NA, don't leave NA. Just move on, you know, move on. Because there's a lot of love in here, you know. There's also a lot of sickness, but there's a lot of love in here, you know. And my experience, that's all I got, is absolute love. You know, the man taught me how to be a man, you know. He taught me how to love, you know. The only man that ever said to me, you know, you acted with dignity. You know, and I was blown out of the water because all I'd done was like followed his suggestion. No one's ever said to me, you acted with dignity, you know. And today, I'm not perfect, you know. Today I do the best I can, the best of my ability, you know. And we talk about God, you know, and I could, God's a big part of my recovery, and it's my God, the one I understand, you know. I don't borrow anyone else's, and for me it's about love, unconditional love, and that's what I've been shown in here, you know. And I, you know, life beyond the wildest dreams. I'm having experiences in my life that are just phenomenal. And the key thing with that, I used to have experiences using, I'm doing it with a sense of freedom that I've never had before in my life, you know. And that's through, you know, NA, you know, keep coming back, simple suggestions, and the unconditional love I've been shown in it. Thanks for letting me share.